Baker.
This is LA's home for the Dodgers.
Somehow makes the play.
And you're listening to Off-Season Dodger Talk.
He bobbles it, falls face first, somehow picks it up, throws behind his back with his face in the dirt. Throw to first base to Gonzalez and makes the play.
Call 866-987-2570 and talk to your host, David Massé.
7 more days until pitchers and catchers report to Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. Welcome to Nissan Dodger Talk. We are with you until 7 o'clock tonight, and we have a great show for you. It's great because one of the all-time great Dodgers will join us at 6:15. That is the one and only Davey Lopes, who just retired officially. He is done with baseball after 45 consecutive years as a player, a manager, and a coach. And he told me during the season that depending on what happened with Dusty Baker and his staff in Washington, that that might be his last season in Major League Baseball, so he could turn his attention towards his family, and that's what he's done. And he was a little taken off guard that just a comment in passing on a Major League Baseball podcast brought so much attention to the fact that he is retiring and has no plans to try to coach in baseball again. So we'll talk to him about that and celebrate his great career, because if you're a Dodger fan and you saw Davey Lopes or have any sense of history about how good Davey Lopes was for the Dodgers at second base, it will be a great interview at 6:15 with the great Davey Lopes. Also, coming up later in the show, I had a great debate with John Hartung and Ned Colletti last night on Sportsnet LA about the top 5 home runs in Dodger postseason history. I will give you my 5 and let you hear the 5 home runs that I feel, in order, are the top 5 in Dodger postseason history. And I want you to let me know which ones you believe are the best in Dodger postseason history. But we start off the show with a war of words on Twitter today between the players, their union, and Commissioner Manfred, and now Scott Boras getting into the act with some of his tweets and some of his comments to reporters. But, you know, I'm not going to get into how much money the players should make or why they're not making and why they're not signing. My question to you is, forget about the money, because if you're going to fixate on how much players make, well, then you should fixate on how much teams are generating and how much you're helping them generate their money, along with the television money that they're getting, which in turn is you. But if we fixate on that, you'll drive yourself crazy, because I'll never convince you otherwise. You know, it's a different world, you know, just like different jobs, occupations, they pay differently. And baseball players take a piece of the pie of a $12 billion industry right now. But that's not, I think it's been driven into the ground on this show. So let's focus on the quality of the game. And how good is the game if half of the National League is not trying to win? Now, I know in the past there have been teams that have not been very good and have lost 90 games before. Maybe some were trying to go with the youth movement, but some were buying some free agents, going with some veterans that did not perform to their contracts. We've seen that. We've seen 2 or 3 teams, but this is somewhat problematic for baseball, because you have 1, 3, 6 teams in the National League that I can count right now that on opening day or even on the first day of spring training have no chance of competing or winning more than 70 games. In the NL West, you have the San Diego Padres. The Giants, I don't know how much more they're going to improve from having the worst record in baseball last year, but at least you know they're trying to make an effort to get better. They've proven that to a certain extent, making the trades for Evan Longoria and Andrew McCutcheon. They haven't signed any free agents, and they were willing to take on Giancarlo Stanton's contract, so you can't really say they're tanking their season intentionally. They just have players that are getting older and not performing to the level that they did when they won those 3 championships. In the NL Central, very obvious, and really for a long time, the Pittsburgh Pirates have been that team that really are trying to be, I won't even say economically conscious, they're just basically cheap and don't want to reinvest money into their payroll. And I know they talk about it's a small market. Well, you are getting revenue-sharing dollars, and now you're getting an influx of $50 million from the sale of BAM Technology from MLB.com. So none of that has gone back into their system or their payroll. And then you have the Cincinnati Reds, who are obviously not trying. And then you have the NL East, the Atlanta Braves, the Marlins, and the Phillies, who have not signed one major free agent, the first two teams. The Phillies have. They signed Carlos Santana from the Indians early on. But those three teams have no chance. And then you look at the American League and how bad it is there. But let's focus on the National League, the Dodgers. As a Dodger fan, you should be ecstatic because I mentioned this the other night. They are on their way to winning somewhere between 95 and 100 games with the talent on these other teams in the competition in the National League. Albeit, their division is the most competitive of any division in baseball, and Chris Iannetta brought that to light, how it's a very unbalanced schedule when you look at the Nationals and who they have to play in the NL East, the Cubs, who they have to play in the NL Central, and the Dodgers. They have to compete with virtually every team outside the Padres that are trying to win. The Giants always give them a hard time, and like I said, they have major league talent on their roster. You have the Rockies, who were in it till the end last year and improved their team. And then you have the Arizona Diamondbacks, who probably will take a step back without J.D. Martinez, but will be competitive. They're trying to win. And, you know, they really haven't signed any major league talent either. They could use some talent that's out there right now, to be honest with you. So I'm not quite sure why there's so many free agents on the market, but the fact is there are a lot of impact players and really good players that can help any of these teams win. But they have chosen not to go that route for whatever reason. Now, for you as a Dodger fan, when you look at your pocket schedule and go online and you look at that schedule and you're choosing your mini game plan, are you going to pick the games that have the Pirates or Reds without a bobblehead night or a good giveaway night? I don't think so. And that hurts the Dodgers. And I guess the other question for you, too, is who cares? You're a Dodger fan. If they have an easier way to get to the World Series again, does it even matter to you? Because I know there's a lot of fans that have that point of view. And I guess if I was a fan, I wouldn't care about the other teams and how they're not really trying. That only benefits the Dodgers. So it's kind of a double-edged sword here, and I'm curious to know what you think. Are you happy about the fact that there are so many teams in the National League that do not have major league ready proven talent on their rosters, which will make things a lot easier for your team? 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. When we come back, we'll talk to a man that was on a lot of championship teams that competed each and every year. That's the one and only Davey Lopes. He joins us next on Nissan Dodger Talk on AM 570 LA Sports. This is Nissan Dodger Talk. David Vassay with you until 8 o'clock tonight right here on AM 570 LA Sports. We'll be back on with you again tomorrow night from 7 to 8 o'clock right here on AM 570 LA Sports. 866-987-2570 is the phone number, pound blue, for our AT&T subscribers. And we'll get back to your phone calls in just a moment, but we are joined by one of the greatest, if not the greatest, L.A. Dodgers second baseman, right up there with some of the all-time greats that played that position for the Dodgers in their history, and a guy that I grew to know as a coach over the years with the Dodgers, and one of the great people in baseball. And I guess he's retiring, even though he did not hold a press conference. Davey Lopes is our guest. Davey, I know you were taken off guard by all the attention you've gotten the last few days.
Yeah, it started up about 4 or 5 days ago, and I started getting these phone calls, and I was saying, why is everybody calling me? And then my niece called me, and she says, Uncle, I think you're on Facebook or something like that. I don't know what it is. and I asked her, what is that, naturally? But anyway, she said, you know, they cut that you retired. I said, who's they? He says, I don't know. It just says that you retired. I said, oh, okay, whatever. And I didn't think anything of it because my way of thinking is if I didn't show up after a while, the sooner or later, they're going to say, hey, he must be retired. So that's how I did it, sneak in, sneak out.
Yeah, exactly right. 50 years in baseball, 45 consecutive years at the major league level. Is it difficult for you to think that when spring training starts, you won't be there, or has it not hit you yet?
It hasn't hit me yet. It's getting close, though. But it's something that we all have to, you know, face sooner or later. And I've been blessed and had a long career. And, you know, I don't know what holds for the future, but if nothing comes along, it's been a great 45 years.
When you reflect back on your teams with the Dodgers, Davey, is there one year that stands out to you more than another? I know you guys finally broke through and beat the Yankees in 81, but was there one team that really stood out to you one season?
I just thought the either one of the 77 or the 78 team, I thought either one of those teams should have won, and I'm sure everybody else that played in it felt the same way, that we should have won at least one of those two games. But, you know, that will never happen. The Yankees are pretty tough, but we definitely had the ability and the potential to win both, but we didn't do it.
You were an outfielder originally.
Yeah.
Who was the biggest influence on you in getting to the big leagues as a second baseman?
Well, it all started up in Spokane, Washington, about 1970, I believe it was, or something like that, or 73, 72. And Tommy, it was sort of just said to me, you ever think about taking ground balls at second base? I says, no, not really. What for? He said, well, maybe you should start taking some ground balls out there. And I said, oh, my God, they're going to try to make me a second baseman at 25 years old? Are they nuts? So, and there goes my chance of making it to the big leagues. That's what I was thinking. But, you know, through a lot of hard work, Tommy got me started. I don't know if he's the one to initiate the idea, but and the guy that did most of the work when I went over to the instruction league was Monty Basco, the best infield coach in the history of baseball.
Yeah, and I guess I've heard a lot about Monty Basco, and he had a lot of influence on a lot of you guys, right? A lot of those guys that made it from all the way from single A and rookie ball all the way to the big leagues, right?
Yeah, then he finally got to the big leagues with us, you know, and deservedly so. But Tom, he just didn't have any, he didn't want to fool around. He said, one day he pulled me over to the side. He says, do you want to be a second baseman or what? Do you want to do this? And I said, yeah, I thought I was doing pretty good. He said, well, you're not. Okay. He said, if you want it, you can become a good second baseman, but you have to work, Dave. You have to work at it. It's not going to be easy. So, you know, once I got that boost of confidence, so to speak, from Monty, it was all downhill after that. I was in the big leagues 1 year later. Crane came up in September of 72. So
the way you just described Monty Basco talking to a young Davey Lopes reminds me of the way you would talk to a player when you were a coach.
Yeah, he reminded me of myself a lot, in a lot of ways. I couldn't say anything because I had so much respect for him. He was a great man and a great infield instructor, about the best I've ever been around.
Davey Lopes is our guest. He is not going to be in the coach's box or on a major league field for the first time in 45 years when spring training comes around. And, Davey, when you talk about Monty Basco and you as a coach, I know you had a lot of gratifying moments as a player, but when you impact other players, the next generation, like you have with the Phillies, with Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley and Jason Wirth, and you hear Matt Kemp and D. Gordon talk about you the way they do, is that equally or more gratifying that you had that type of impact on other guys?
It was equally as gratifying, to be honest with you, because when you look at it, I always felt as myself as a teacher. I didn't know if I'd be able to teach at the major league level, because sometimes that can be a difficult thing to do because of personalities and guys not really putting forth the effort in what you're trying to do or what you're trying to teach. But I was very fortunate. I got played around a lot of young kids that had great running abilities and turned themselves into outstanding base dealers. And it was just, you know, pretty magical, you know, when it all took place, ironically, over there at Philadelphia. They wanted to run. They wanted to incorporate base stealing into their philosophical part of the game. And they asked me some questions when I went in for an interview, and one of them was for Victorino, about Vic, since he's a former Dodger also. They said, Davey, Pat Gillick asked me, do you think that you can get Victorino to steal about 20 bases? And I tell him, there's 20 bases. What the hell? That's nothing. So I'm saying to myself, I said, I'll tell you what I do. I said, if I can't get him to steal more than 20 bases, you don't have to pay me. Of course, I was kidding. But, you know, I really felt that. There's no reason why a guy with that kind of ability and that kind of quickness, it's sometimes guys just need a little bit of a push. And it all worked out well for him, the rest of the guys on that club, and myself as well.
Yeah, in case people don't understand, Davey Loeb stole 557 bases in his career, so that's why maybe 20 is no big deal to Davey Loeb.
No, not at all.
Davey, you talking to guys that were with the Dodgers when you were the first base coach, they always said you had just a knack for knowing the pitcher's moves and helping them steal the base like you did with Shane Victorino. Is that natural? Because it just seems like you had that knack, and you see coaches now just studying, staring at the screen, and they still can't do it as good as you do.
It was a knack, to be honest with you. It was something that I had the ability instantaneously. I just recognized it. It's like a great hitter in a lot of ways, that they can see the spin on the ball and wait back longer and consequently probably drive the ball a lot better, whereas a hitter like me, or that's similar to me, we would make an out or swing and miss the ball, that type of thing. But, you know, I was blessed with the ability to pick up idiosyncrasies on the pitcher's body, and I could see them early. I had to relay verbally, to be honest with you, verbally to my runner what this guy is doing. And the first baseman standing there right there, and he looks at me, are you crazy? I said, well, go tell him. I said, go tell him, see what he does with it. So, you know, but I had a lot of fun with it. And, yeah, I had the ability to pick it up. It might be as simple as just a guy looks down when he's going home and looks to first base when he's going to first. So, I mean, that sounds so easy, but you'd be surprised where a lot of kids won't be able to see that.
Davey Loeb. Yeah, Davey Loeb is our guest. And, Davey, you closed out your coaching career with Dusty Baker as the manager.
Yeah.
Were you guys always tight from day one when you were playing with the Dodgers? And how did that relationship evolve?
We had a very good relationship. I thought we had a lot of respect for each other, both on and off the field. And so much so that he made me the godchild of his daughter. So, I mean, I thought that was a little... I said, whoa, this is, because it's where I come from, that's taking on a big responsibility, if God forbid, if something should happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and that's how I looked at it, and I was more than happy to do it.
Yeah, that's bigger than naming you his first base coach, being the godfather of his daughter.
Yeah. that's why, and one of the reasons why they called me the godfather.
Really?
So, they did it all the last 2 years in Washington, that's what they were calling me, the godfather. So. I knew it was time to go then.
Hey, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse, right, Davey? That's what they were telling you.
Oh, yeah. Me. Yeah. I said, if you don't run on this next pitch, you're going to have a lot of trouble.
Davey Loeb is our guest. Hey, Davey, Matt Kemp is back with the Dodgers. And yeah, so I'm curious your thoughts on that and how you think he'll be this time around.
I think he's probably matured more. I mean, obviously, you know, he's a very smart guy, and I think he learned from his mistakes. And I still think he's got a lot of talent. I think injuries caught up with him in his career. Or this guy would have had a bigger impact on the game of baseball than he has already. So, but you know, hopefully, you just got to wait and see how things go in spring training, and hopefully, I'm wishing naturally for him to do well. And you know, have a great year for the Dodgers.
Davey, not only Matt Kemp, but there's so many other players that, like I mentioned, have so much respect for you. Do you believe the biggest reason why was because you never sugarcoated anything and they could come to you, and whether or not they wanted to hear the truth, they would get the truth from you?
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, a lot of people are afraid to tell the truth a lot of times. You know, I would rather have someone tell me up front exactly what's going on rather than try to sugarcoat things. You know what I mean? I may not like what you're going to say, but I respect you more for saying it. And a lot of times in sports or in life in general, a lot of people will, they can't for some reason just say the truth, you know, what they're really thinking. I don't know. I didn't think I had a problem with it. People may have thought I had a problem with it, but I would just sometimes I would say to them, "Do you really want to hear the truth?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's as simple as that. And if they said yes, I would tell it to them straight out. If they didn't, I could sugarcoat it with the best of them.
Or you just walk away, right? You say, "All right," and that's it.
Well, I wouldn't walk away. I wouldn't walk away. No, I don't think I ever did that. But, you know, it's communication, basically. You know, when they, I may have a stern exterior, but it's soft inside. So they just have to get to that soft side.
That's right. I saw that soft side, and I always appreciate you letting me see that side of you because you're such a great guy. And, one of the best genuine people that I've ever come around in the game of baseball, because there's a lot of guys that are the opposite of Davey Lopes, and it was a pleasure to be that close to you and learn from you, and I'll miss seeing you every day, or when now that we saw each other just a couple of times a year, I'll miss that. And if you get bored in retirement, I mean, there you could co-host Dodger Talk with me, Davey. I know that's one of your career dreams.
That'll give us something to do anyhow.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, David. So.
Hey, one of the highlights, too, of traveling with you, Davey, was when we were in Toronto. I don't know if you remember this. There was an English-accented kid that would scream at you before the game during BP, begging for your autograph, and you would scream, "Mr. Lopes, Mr. Lopes," until you...
Oh, over and over again.
Do you remember that guy?
Yeah. Oh, my God. How could I forget him?
You know? That was one of my highlights of the time we spent together. And one of the headaches for you.
Oh, boy. He was relentless.
Yeah.
So it was good, though. It's all right.
All right, so this officially ends your media tour announcing your retirement. So congratulations on it, and all the best to your family, and thanks for everything.
David, thank you for everything, and you do an outstanding job in L.A.
Thanks, Davey. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
All right, there he goes, Davey Lopes. And that's just a see you later. That's not a goodbye to Davey Lopes, and maybe the Dodgers will reel him in for a first pitch at some point in time. He's on the West Coast, and seriously, one of the great guys, most genuine people I've ever been around, and obviously one of the great players for 16 years, and you know you got to be a really good baseball man to stay in the big leagues as a player, as a manager, and a coach for 45 consecutive years, and one of the great guys. It's hard for me to do that interview because I know him so well, and you know, you're a little bit emotionally attached, and he's one of the best, and he's going to be missed. But he's not dead. Let's not act like he's dead. He's just retiring, which will be a good thing for him and his family. Davey Lopes, and if you missed the interview, it'll be podcasted after the show at am570lasports.com. All right, when we come back, we'll take your phone calls at 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. I will give you my top five Dodger postseason home runs in their history. I want to hear yours. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Dodger Talk with David Vassay until 7 o'clock on AM570 LA Sports. Thanks to the great Davey Lopes for joining us. In case you missed it, like I said, you could podcast it at am570lasports.com. Davey Lopes will not be on a major league field for the first time in 45 years as a player, manager, or coach because he has decided to hang him up and spend more time with his family. And who can blame him with that baseball schedule? And his family's excited to have him home. He will not be going to spring training, and he's one of the great guys and arguably, maybe the best second baseman in L.A. Dodger history. 866-987-2570 is the phone number. Pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Earlier in the show, I asked you whether or not it bothers you that the Dodgers will be playing basically a very easy schedule in the National League since so many teams are basically mailing it in before spring training even starts. And I'll let you hear my top five postseason Dodger home runs in just a moment. I want to hear yours as well, but let's go out to the phones. Rosemead, John, you're on with David Vassay. Hi, John.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing great after hearing Davey Lopes' voice.
Yeah, that was a really good interview, man. Awesome stuff. I'll just be really quick, though. I think, you know what, the Dodgers are going to go out there. We're going to see our guys play, and, I mean, they're going to put on a great season. I'm excited for that. I'm a little upset, you know, besides the NL West being so competitive, you know, the NL East isn't going to be in the Central besides the Cubs and the Brewers. It's going to be kind of like up in the air, teams winning 75 games at the most. But, you know, as long as the Dodgers do what they need to do and get to the World Series, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah, it feels that way. It doesn't matter who they play or how they get there. Nobody will remember that. But the fact is, you know, the competition isn't very good this year in the National League. And baseball's different than the other sports. But the fact is, let's forget about just the offense. Everybody looks at the offense. If you don't have major league ready talent, you got pitchers that can't throw strikes that are going to get hit hard, and you probably don't have a very good defense behind you because usually those young guys are not very good defensively. So the pitching's the number one thing. And, you know, Rob Manfred wants to complain about the time of game. Well, a lot of these tanking teams are going to have a lot of pitchers that can't throw strikes, which will make the games go longer. But, yeah, it's a pitch clock, right? Yeah. All right. Let's go out to downtown. Manny, you're on with David Vasse. What's up, Manny?
David, good evening. That was a great interview with Davey Lopes. It's always a pleasure to hear a class act on the radio.
He's the man.
He is the man. You know, I got to agree with what Justin Turner tweeted not too long ago this afternoon. If you want to get the best players on the field, you got to, you know, you're going to eventually have to pay them. And, you know, this is a players' league. You know, it should be, you know, it's definitely, you know, in favor of the player. But right now there's some type of power struggle. And hopefully they, you know, both sides end up working it out. But I am in the favor of the players because, you know, you don't have a team without players unless you get those, you know, we don't want to even say it, replacement players. And
You're not even close to that, Manny. It's not even close to that. And, you know, for anybody to talk about players versus owners, it's not even to that point yet because it gets to that point when there's a strike or a lockout. Because right now the players are helpless, and the only thing they can do is send out tweets. They can't change the CBA. It's their fault. It is what it is right now, and didn't put pressure on their leadership or change the leadership to get a better deal for them.
Right. And really quick, just I have a couple of home runs. I went to the World Series this year. Game one was, you know, the best game for me personally. Leadoff home run, Chris Taylor, that, you know, rocked the entire ravine and all throughout Los Angeles, California. And then, the Corey Seager, I believe it was game four, one of the home games, he just knocked it in. He hit the 3-1 home run, but the expression on his face. And
I mean, that was a great
World
expression.
Series are blessed this year, David. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Manny, thanks for the phone call. All right, we will get to my top five Dodger postseason home runs since Manny kicked us off there. And we all know what number one is, so let's just get that out of the way, Ronnie.
High fly ball.
Yes, yes, it's Kirk Gibson's home run in game one of the 1988 World Series. No surprise, so let's just get that out of the way. But let's talk about the other four in my feelings, in my opinion. And I had this debate with John Hartung and Ned Colletti last night. And here is my number five best home run in Dodger postseason history. It was Kirk Gibson in game four of the 1988 NLCS in the top half of the 12th inning against Roger McDowell.
Gibson hits a high drive, a towering drive to deep right center field, and that one is gone. So he hits a home run in the 12th inning after not hitting a ball out of the infield all night long. And as Tim just said, a low ball hitter against the sinker ball pitcher.
That was, yes, Al Michaels on the call on ABC back in the day. His partners were Tim McCarver and Jim Palmer during that 1988 NLCS. And Kirk Gibson does not have the opportunity to hit that game-winning home run in the top half of the 12th inning at Shea Stadium of Game 4 of the 1988 NLCS if it wasn't for Mike Socha, who came up against Dwight Gooden, who was dominating the Dodgers and had a dominant 1988 season. Mike Socha comes up in the top half of the ninth inning against Dwight Gooden, who is dealing with John Shelby at first base after he drew a walk.
Socha at the plate, Hernandez playing back of the runner at first, and that's ripped to right field and deep. Strawberry goes back, she's gone. Mike Socha with 35 home runs in 8.5 years in the major leagues. And we talked about him throughout the series, big and strong, but really a contact hitter. A man who doesn't strike out a lot and who doesn't hit very many home runs, averaging about 4 per season. It's the biggest of his career.
No doubt. And that home run is easily forgotten in the 1988 postseason because everybody, and rightfully so, talks about Gibson's home run in game one of the World Series. But the Dodgers don't have the World Series, and Gibson does not get that chance in the 12th inning of Game 4 of the 88 NLCS, or even Game 1 of the 1988 World Series. If Mike Scioscia does not tie the game with a two-run home run off of the best pitcher in the National League and maybe in baseball that year, Dwight Gooden, a two-run shot to give the Dodgers to tie the game for the Dodgers in the 88 NLCS. And that home run, Scioscia's home run, for me, for a very long time, was the third, I would say, the third greatest Dodger postseason home run until this past postseason, when Justin Turner, on the 29th anniversary of Kirk Gibson's World Series home run, had his own dramatics against John Lackey in Game 2 of the NLCS.
Turner with a fly ball to center field. It's way back at the wall. A three-run walk-off home run for Justin Turner. The Dodgers are up 2-0, and they are going crazy.
No doubt that is the third greatest Dodger postseason home run in their history. And you talk about Mike Scioscia versus Justin Turner. The reason why JT's bumped Scioscia's from number three on my list is because it was a walk-off home run. It immediately gave the Dodgers a postseason win. Mike Scioscia's home run, yes, a great one, an improbable one, against the best pitcher in baseball that year, Dwight Gooden, but it only tied the game. The Dodgers could have lost that game in extra innings, but that was the tiebreaker. And we could go 3A, 3B. I'm not going to shortchange Mike. That was a great home run. But Justin Turner's, for me, the reason why, the 29th anniversary of Gibson's home run, and it immediately gave the Dodgers a postseason win on a walk-off home run instead of just tying the game like Mike Scioscia did at Shea Stadium. But the little David Vassay and me will always have Mike Scioscia's a little bit higher than Justin Turner's. But I'm being objective. I'm a professional now, as you can hear in my voice. All right. Maybe the single most overlooked home run in Dodger postseason history is the one that came in Game 5 and the deciding game of the 1981 NLCS that sent the Dodgers to the 1981 World Series and a rematch against the New York Yankees, and it's our own Rick Monday.
Here's the 3-1 pitch, and it swung on, fly ball, center field, Dawson going back onto the warning track, Dawson at the wall, that ball is a home run! That ball is out of here, and a home run for Rick Monday, and the Dodger bench clears to congratulate Rick Monday, who has hit a two-out home run here in the ninth inning. And it appeared that Andre Dawson had room as he went back to the fence, and he just flat ran out of room as the ball cleared the fence at about the 385 mark.
I still think they call that Blue Monday in Montreal to this very day. And if you ever heard Rick Monday talk about it, he doesn't talk about himself that much. He'll tell you two things about that home run. It was freezing cold, and he could barely feel the bat on his hands. And number two, to this day, if he goes to Montreal, customs gives him a very hard time to get in and out of Quebec and our northern friendly border, supposedly, in Montreal. So Rick Monday's, and I would love to see that home run shown more at Dodger Stadium. What he did as an American saving the flag obviously is on a different transcendent level. But what he did as a Dodger in a Dodger uniform that sent them directly to Yankee Stadium, I don't feel gets appreciated as much as it should be. So those are my five. Kirk Gibson's home run in Game 1 of the 88 World Series. Rick Monday's Game 5 is my number 2 in the 81 NLCS. My number 3 is Justin Turner's in Game 2 of the NLCS. Game 4 of the 88 NLCS, Mike Scioscia's game-tying home run off Doc Gooden, and then Kirk Gibson's go-ahead home run in the top half of the 12th inning of that very same Game 4 in 1988. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Let's go out to Gardena. Manny, you're on Dodger Talk. What's up, Manny?
G to the B, the John of Dodger Stadium, the Count of Camelback. Hey, man, excellent interview with the thief extraordinaire of the 70s, Davey Loach. Hey, it would be great, man, if it was either Dodger Talk with Dave and Davey, or maybe they could bring him in as like a stolen base consultant, maybe just for, you know, down in Arizona or whatnot.
He's retired, man. He's spending time with his family.
Well, you know, hey, one can only hope because, you know, he's part of that glorious 70s infield. He's part of Dodger history. So maybe, you know, but if not, hey, more power to him. God bless him and his family. DV, what I want to talk about, is Darvish coming or not? And last thing, collusion schmollusion. This bubble was due to burst. It doesn't matter how much the owners are making. And we're going to see this in every sport. Mark my words, DV. Love the show.
All right. Thanks for the phone call, Manny. I disagree. It's a $12 billion industry, and whatever percentage it is, the players should continue to grow with the sport, and their salary should grow with the sport, just like your own company. If the company continues to grow and continues to exceed profits, shouldn't you, the worker, get a greater percentage or at least continue to maintain the percentage that gives you more dollars in your pocket? It doesn't work that way, as we all know, but that's the way it should work. And the players only have themselves and Tony Clark to blame for the situation they're in. They could have negotiated a much better deal than what they negotiated a year ago. And they were consumed about different petty things that, in the grand scheme of things, don't really make that big of a difference, as qualifying offers attached to free agents, which don't make them free. And also, too, this luxury tax threshold, which essentially is a salary cap. And, you know, those are two major problems that the players have right now, and teams have, as far as spending goes, and the penalties for trying to sign a free agent that has that qualifying offer attached to them. And I can't believe they did not fight harder to try to get rid of it. They were more concerned about other things that really, in the grand scheme of things, are not impacting them as much as, obviously, the economics of the game are impacting them right now. And the rules, the parameters that teams have to play by, because that's what was agreed upon by their union head, Tony Clark. And like I've mentioned before, talking to some players, there is growing dissatisfaction with Tony Clark and the job he has done for them. And, you know, they only have themselves to blame for that, too. And everybody thought the good times are going. Let's keep the good times rolling. Well, obviously the good times have come to an end with the way things have gone in this free agency. Now, I will say this, too. Nick Coletti brought up a great point last night on Sportsnet LA. We don't know what players have turned down. From what we've heard, Eric Hosmer has turned down a 7-year contract. J.D. Martinez has turned down in excess of $100 million. But, and also, too, Greg Holland, who was the closer for the Rockies, 41 saves last year for the Rockies, turned down reportedly the same deal the Rockies gave to Wade Davis, which was 3 years and $52 million. So some of these players are overplaying their hand and misreading the market, obviously. But the fact that I've heard from players and the word with the players are, a guy like Jake Arrieta, who does have the qualifying offer attached to him, has not had one single offer. I mean, that sounds a little fishy to me, but it goes back to the qualifying offer. Maybe teams don't want to give up the penalties that it would give up to sign a guy like Jake Arrieta, who, you know, I don't know how many people are sold that he can continue to do what he's done each of the last 2 or 3 years with the Cubs. So are you willing to give up a second highest draft pick and sacrifice international dollars to sign Jake Arrieta? And you're the Braves, or you're the Brewers, or you're one of those teams, does it really work out for you in the long run and in the short term? I have to side with the organization on that side. But I will say this, you know, I am a believer that proven major league players and pitchers are something of a more valuable commodity than some draft pick of a player that you don't even know will ever pan out for you. But That's the way front offices view things now. They're putting a bigger emphasis on draft picks instead of players that have proven that they could perform at a high level at the major league level. But that qualifying offer, I'm telling you, it's a noose around these guys' necks, and they had to get rid of that. Going back to when Howie Kendrick thought he was going to make a boatload of money, and instead he had to come back to the Dodgers crawling back with accepting that qualifying offer. And I talked to another GM that told me that Lance Lynn should have taken the qualifying offer from the Cardinals, because it doesn't look like he would get that type of money anywhere else. So That qualifying offer is part of the reason why players are not moving. We have Dodger Talk for you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Thanks to Davey Lopes for joining us. Thanks to Ronnie and Matt for their help tonight. Have a great night, everybody. The UCLA Insider Show is next. See you.